Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. In the summer of 2007, I was promoting a movie called Die Hard 4, Live Free or Die Hard, it was called. And as part of the promotional tour, we got to go all around the world. It was so cool. And I was allowed to bring one person, and I decided to bring my friend, John Togo.
I guess I was unavailable.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know why I didn't bring you.
Well, no, next time. Feelings.
If I ever do another big movie. At one point, we stopped in Berlin. And up until that point, Bruce Willis had been around John a lot. And he thought he was my assistant. He just didn't know that John was also an actor. And so when we were in Berlin, Togo went out for a jog. And I guess Bruce was outside signing some autographs, or there were autograph seekers outside. And as Togo left the hotel, like half the autograph seekers turned and spotted him and started pursuing him. So they were like chasing John down the street. Later that day, Bruce came up to me and he said, "Hey, what does John do?"
He must have thought that he was like the best assistant ever.
He was
like famous for being an amazing assistant.
And the Germans would value that, I guess, for being like really on top of things.
That's
really
true.
Responsible.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And with me, as always, is Christian Long.
Hello.
Christian was not there.
Try the hello again.
Oh, yeah. Christian was not there. And with me, as always, is my brother.
Hello.
Oh, well, I thought you wanted to try that again. I thought you wanted to try a better one.
I did.
Oh, that was better.
Yeah.
Okay. That was such a fun trip. And it was such a funny moment that Togo realized that he had – and later that night, we all hung out. There was a premiere in Berlin, and we had an after party. It was really fun.
And Bruce started treating him like a person.
Yeah, he started – he was just different around him. I don't know what to say. Mm. Yeah.
I think you do know what to
say. Yeah, I don't want to say it. But why are we talking about Togo? Togo, a shorty himself.
He is a shorty.
Yeah, big fan of the show. He's been so supportive. And he often critiques the show, and he's my best friend. So it's a welcome critique. He's a big supporter.
Speaking of John Togo.
Oh, right.
A friend of John Togo is our guest on the show today.
Our friend. Dear friend, Maggie Q. Maggie Quigley, known to everyone else as Maggie Q. Maggie is an ex-girlfriend.
Of yours.
Of mine, yeah.
Not just of, and of other people's. Yes. She's had other exes.
Yeah, other lovers she's taken. And Maggie is just one of my favorite people.
You met her doing Die Hard. You hadn't met her before, and you were both cast in this movie, and
I had seen her in Mission Impossible 3.
She often plays ass kicking.
Yeah, that term that we're not crazy about, badasses.
Badasses. She is a badass.
It definitely applies to Maggie. I think that term it's not that I don't like the term, I think it just gets overused.
Agreed.
But she is such a badass. And in Die Hard, she was playing that role. A villain role. Timothy Oliphant was the main villain, and Maggie.
She was like her henchman, right?
Yeah.
Henchwoman.
And we'll talk about this. So I don't want to repeat myself, but I just had so much fun. We had so much fun together on that, and then
your friendship and love blossomed.
Yes,
from there.
It did, and it remains.
Your romantic relationship didn't remain, but your friendship did remain.
Yes.
And you've been close friends for many years now.
Yeah, I just so admire her. And whenever Maggie and I hang out, it'll turn into hours. And so we had to cut it down a little bit.
Yeah, so in addition to Mission Impossible 3 and Die Hard, she's also known for being the lead in the series Nikita that was on for a few years. And
yeah, it was on UPN.
Designated Survivor.
Far more important than that stuff. And she's wonderful. She's very talented. Maggie is one of the most compassionate people I know. And she's become a very, very brave, very courageous activist on behalf of both the environment and animal rights. And she got me involved in certain organizations that enriched my life, and we'll talk about that in the interview, and how she came to have this love, this real deep love for animals. So we're going to get into that and so much more with the wonderful, just hilarious, kind, compassionate friend o' the animals.
And humans.
And humans, yes. Friend o' humans. Sorry. Maggie Q.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and then we'll meet again.
I'm outside in the yard.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I hear little birds.
Oh, can you hear them? Yeah, I've got some gorgeous, I've got a bird bath. And, you know, I feed them, so they all come.
Sure. Wait, Max, do people know, is your last name a well-known thing? I was wondering, and is that something that you...
Oh, you mean my actual last name?
You know, talking about.
Well, I was on Leno once, which, as you know, was not the funny show to do. J-L.
yes.
You know, I mean, he's not...
Did you say it wasn't the most fun show?
Not the easiest. Yeah. I say it's not the easiest. Yeah. Like, there are certain talk show hosts that are like a pleasure to do, and there are other ones that are like, it's like pulling teeth.
Did he ever come backstage with you and just kind of like chit chat?
He did. And I'll tell you, he was so nice to my family. And you know my mom. My mom has no idea who Jay Leno is. And she went with me.
How would you describe your mom in a nutshell?
You know, my mother is a Vietnamese immigrant. She's an incredible woman. She's worked really hard. She's very, you know, I once said, oh, your buttons match your shoes. That's cool. And she looked at me and she went, Mama, know what's up. But in her accent.
That's
and I was great. Like, that's yeah, the weirdest thing I've ever heard anyone. So he was so kind. He came back. You know, he heard my mom and sister were there or whatever, right? So he really was kind. Uh-huh. It's just that his show, like, he's very scripted, as you know. And so if you go off script with Jay Leno, it's harder, right?
Yes, just really quick, I found that when he came backstage, he was very easy to talk to. Same,
yeah,
like very
agreed.
Kind to my family and like
super kind.
Talked to all of us and really like kind of easy and connected. And
totally.
And weirdly, his voice, and then you go on stage and his voice shot up. And
he
was like, you know, he's doing his thing.
Yeah, he's doing his thing. Yeah.
But totally lovely and whatever. Sorry. So continue. So you're backstage.
So lovely. Yeah. And it's weird that it's like, it's showtime and like people clam up. I mean, normally it's the opposite, right? I mean, it's showtime and people are amazing. And then they come off stage and like, you don't know how to speak to them. So he comes back and he says hi to my sister. And you know, my mom has no idea what's going on. Right. And then, and then I said, and then mom goes, so I said, Mom, this is Jay. And he goes, hi, you know, Miss Q, it's so nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. Jay, this is my sister. And he has his back turned to me and my mom because he's saying something to my sister. And my mom turns to me and she goes, honey, who it did man? And I said, I said, Mom, that's the man. That's the guy. This is his show. And she goes, honey, did his show? How? Hit show, did his show, honey, he's so nice to you. And I said, well, yeah, like, I'm a guest tonight. Like, I'm like on the show.
She didn't understand why.
She didn't understand, like, why he would want me, because my mom's Asian, so nothing, I mean, nothing we do is good enough. So she couldn't.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Well, I want to get into that. Yeah. Oh, boy. Wait. But the stuff that you did in Asia, because you had a huge career before you had a huge career in America, in Asia. So that stuff must have been cool to her.
I don't quite know that it was, to be honest. Like, you know, it's sort of like
really?
Certain people will gauge, like, it's cool to them that people know who you are. But I don't know if they really, I don't know if she, maybe now she does. But at the time, I don't think she really grasped that they knew who I am because of my work. Or because, like, I do, hopefully, some quality things that people
I've noticed, well, my parents do anyway, which we'll get to. I think they watched every episode of Nikita. Did you know that?
That they
were, like, faithful Nikita?
No, I know they watched Designated Survivor, which seems about right.
Oh, they watch all your stuff. They watch your stuff more than my stuff.
Well, to be fair.
My dad, that's true.
Okay, for example, like after we did Die Hard, the New York Times did this like whole page on like, and by the way, I don't know why they did it, but they did this whole page on my career and how weird it was. And they were like, you know, here's this American chick who lived and worked in Asia first and made this name for herself. And then she crosses back over to the U.S.
Really?
But so my sister said, Mom, did you see that page of Maggie in the New York Times? And I don't tell my family anything that comes out, like nothing. Like they'll be like, you know, they'll go to work and be like, oh, I saw your daughter on Letterman last night. And they're like, what? Like they, you know, I never tell anybody because I don't care.
Who is Letterman?
And my mom looked at her and said, so there's this little free newspaper like in our town. It's called the Kanu
in
Pepa.
In Hawaii.
Yeah, in Hawaii, in this little town where we live. And it is free and it's small, you know, it's like legal sized. Okay. So my sister says this to her, and she sort of looks at my sister kind of bewildered and says, well, they don't write about her in the Kanu Pepa because that's her local newspaper, right? Like, that's what she picks up for
value.
Free.
That
has value, and the New York Times doesn't have any value for her because she doesn't read the New York Times.
That's so interesting.
Right.
Well, it's all depends on your perspective, and right? I'm sure, and I can attest to this personally, you're a massive star in Asia. Like, I've been to Chinatown with you. I just trust me, everyone. She doesn't pass an Asian person who's not like, what the fuck? First of all, and I know a lot of this, so we're going to retread a few things. But I also want to, it's nice for me to update in terms of my friendship with you. It's good to just, I have a terrible memory. So some of this I actually don't remember.
Worst. Yeah.
So you moved to Tokyo to pursue modeling. Why?
Well, here's what's interesting.
I'm kidding. I'm just
to
kidding.
Say, no.
What made you think? Did you? So, how old were you then when you moved from Honolulu?
I graduated from high school. I was 17 years old in Hawaii, and I had a girlfriend called Mary, who is the same mix as me. She's half Vietnamese, half white. She's so beautiful, and she's always been sort of this darling. And all these clients would come to Hawaii, and they'd shoot catalogs, and she was always their star on the cover of their magazines and stuff. And she was really beautiful and very successful. And Mary had it on lock. She would go, you know, to Asia every summer and model and make a bunch of money and come home. And I was like, wow, like, I mean, I wanted to be her when I grew up. And so she was just like, Mags, you know, you need to just come with me and I'll help you. And by the way, just so we're clear, models don't do this. You know, people who are legitimately working and have success aren't like, hey, you who looks, you know, not dissimilar to me. I mean, I wasn't as beautiful as she was, but it was like,
you were her competition.
You know, right. Like, they don't go like, hey, you know, come on over to Tokyo with me. I'll introduce you to my clients and help you out. Like, that just doesn't happen. So.
But she liked you. I mean, it's as simple as that. Like,
she did. And she was like slightly older than me. So I think she took an older sister position too. And I really did. I think she thought that quite rightly, that I was really having a hard time. I was really struggling with paying for school and seeing the future and what it could be and my whole situation.
Right.
Max,
what did you see like at that point? What did the future look like?
All I knew, which you know well, because you know me well, is I loved animals more than I could even, you know, express. They were always my joy, and I wanted to work with animals. And one of the things I said to myself when I was younger was, I want to help animals. That's what I want to do in my life. And I thought at the time, the only way to do that, I wanted to be a vet. So because I thought that was the only way you helped animals, as if it's to be a vet, you know, you help them medically. And the nice thing about what I've been able to do and parlay my career into as an activist and as, you know, someone who's worked in animal nonprofit for over 20 years now, I've been able to fulfill that dream, weirdly, in a very different way.
Oh,
and had
God,
I become
yeah.
a vet, I would never help as many animals as I do now.
Exactly. In such an impactful way. But you, where did that come from? I don't think I do know this. Like, what do you remember a formative moment, like a memory that stands out that was like – I don't know, I'm picturing you seeing like a crippled deer on the side of the road and nursing it back to health or something.
We don't have deer in Hawaii, but yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
I watched Bambi. I mean, we don't have anything in Hawaii. We have wild boar and no, there's nothing dangerous.
Then.
There's no snakes. There's no,
a crippled snake.
a crippled wild boar. You know, I mean, I know your podcast is super fun, and I'm not going to bring anyone down, but I will say in all honesty, yeah. You know, people weren't very nice to me, humans, and people were very hurtful. And when I was down, when I was hurt, when I had no words for people, or I couldn't turn to anyone, that love, that unconditional, non-judgmental warmth and dedication to another person, no matter what you look like, no matter how you're acting, no matter who likes you or doesn't, whether you have friends, or you're popular, or you're not, like there's no animals don't have that type of standard, right? Because they're not shallow like we are, right? They're not
well,
even
like
evolved enough
of,
to have
like some
that
of you
kind
are.
Of distinction. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Clearly.
Yeah. I'm
not us.
I'm more like an animal. Yeah.
We've never been shallow.
No.
But yeah, they don't have
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
They're not evolved enough to have those type of prejudices, right? They live purely on instinct and they're the purest expressions of love that I've ever been around, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, I mean, you hear a lot of animal people say, you know, I like animals more than people. I love people. Oh. I love both. I think people are incredible. And I also think that I can't help animals unless I like people. And if you're excluding people, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, Matt, so, okay, let's go back to you're 17, 18.
Yes.
You're out
yes.
of high school. You're having trouble paying bills. Your friend Mary then says, hey, this modeling might be something you want to look into. Then do you just go straight? How do you go from that to you meet her agent?
Well, you know, there's these sort of contracts that happen in the modeling world. And I'm not talking like at the top level.
Yeah.
You know, there's sort of like indentured servitude contracts that happen. And,
oh, whoa.
You know, they pay your way to the country of choice, whichever one it is that you're going to. And then they charge you exorbitant amounts of money for all kinds of things, to get photos done, for your rent. I mean, they're really like sticking it to these girls because you're too young. You don't know what the deal is, right?
Yeah. So. I'm so glad I avoided all those people who wanted me to do that.
You were just smart. You were just smarter than the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And,
fought
you know, frankly, I was, It was tempting. It was tempting. But I thought, nope, I'm on a different path. How much of this do you know going into it? Are you learning the hard way then?
Definitely learning the hard way. They're deducting your rent. They're deducting all these things. And, you know, they take the risk and they make sure that you're going to try to get at least a job so you can pay them back so that they're covered. But really, it's just this awful rotation.
It's like a scam.
I mean, it's a horrible industry. I mean, it's disgusting. I mean, there was a whiteboard up right when you walked in the agency and it had every girl that, you know, was working at the time name listed. And then every Friday when you'd come into the agency to check in, they'd weigh you and then they put your weight up on the board. So everybody could see it.
Oh, my God.
And your weight from the previous weeks was also there. So you could see if people gained weight.
Wow.
What they did as well, one of the things that it served was the way that they would pit girls against each other. So girls would come in and be like, oh, so-and-so is so skinny. And I'm not. Or I gained weight and she didn't. Oh, God. And how they would create a competition so that girls would starve themselves and not ever gain any weight. Yeah.
And these are teenagers.
Nice,
so already they have, these teenagers probably have such insecurities. And oh my God.
I was always the one who never gained a pound. And it was because I was so poor that I couldn't afford food. I mean, I literally, if I had, and at this time, and this is in the late 90s, you know how expensive Japan is. There were like four apples in a package. And by the end of the week, if I could save up like $10 US at the time, I could buy those apples. And I was so excited because I couldn't afford fruit. Like, I couldn't afford anything. And so it was sort of like, you know, I literally didn't have enough money to eat proper meals. And so I was just like buying little things from 7-Eleven and eating them when I could afford them.
Oh, the other models must have been like, fuck her.
Pretty much. Like, it was always the Brazilian, wow, the pretty Brazilian girls that I had a good time with, because we kind of had the same, I was an island girl and they were a little like, you know, we're warm weather girls.
Now, this is something I forget. Did you harbor desires at that point to be an actress, or is it
never
something you had done
never
in school?
Never.
Never. Yeah. Wow.
Well, I was a creative person, but I don't come from a creative family. And so maybe if you grew up now, that would be fine. And parents would look at you and recognize your individualism and go, how amazing. You're not like us. But hey, you should really do pottery and you should write poetry and you should do all the things that I did as a kid.
How did you get from Tokyo to Hong Kong? Because Hong Kong, there was a thriving business there.
There was an agency interested in me in Taiwan, and so I flew to Taipei, and I was I don't think I've ever been more depressed in my life. I was poor, and it was cold, and Japanese culture I was very familiar with because I was born and raised in Hawaii, and so, I mean, Japanese culture is just like, it's the most dominant culture in Hawaii. Like, everyone's Japanese or mixed with Japanese. And then I went to Taiwan, and this was a totally foreign culture, language, people. Like, the whole thing was so – and then I was just trying to make a little bit more money, and I didn't know anyone. And I didn't – you know, it was so – I was so lost and so scared. And as luck would have it, when I was there at the time, they were looking for, like, Caucasian blonde girls with blue eyes or famous Chinese people. Those were the people getting jobs. And perfect. I would walk in the room and they didn't want anything that was exotic looking. They didn't like that. Yeah. That was not the vibe at the time. Huh. So I got rejected from every single job that I was up for. And I was like, oh God, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so I was just
you're in
kind
a market.
Of lonely, poor. I would walk to the market, spend my dollar. And then I would spend like an extra 25 cents on an ear of corn, like a cooked corn. And it made me happy. And I remember going back to this shitty love motel I was living in. And there was a guy who worked at the front desk. This guy would watch me. And so he finally asked me one day, he said, how much did you pay for that corn? I said, like 25 cents. And he goes, that's really expensive. They're ripping you off because you're a foreigner. And I said, oh, well, but I really like corn and it makes me happy. And he's like, don't buy it anymore. They're ripping you off. And I was like, okay. So the next night I go to the market, I come back. He was working there and
he
cared. I think he saw how sad I was and how alone I was. And so that night I walk in without the corn and he looks more excited than he's ever seen in the month I had been living there. And he's waving for me to come over. And I'm like, Christ, what is happening? So he takes me to this back room. I'm standing there and I truly thought, oh my God, there's going to be like body parts. And he opens the bag and it's full of corn. Just like ears and ears of corn. and he says to me, you know, every night when you come home, I'll boil you one. And then you don't have to pay so much money because I bought this whole bag for the price that you paid for that one corn. I just looked at him and then I went up to my room and I just cried and cried and cried. Because at that point, not a lot of people had been nice to me. And so that simple thing, and that's why being kind to people is so important but genuinely kind. I mean, not so people will like you. I mean, genuinely seeing something in someone that, you know, a void or something that's missing and showing them kindness because you have no clue where that person's at. You have no clue what that will do to someone. And weirdly enough, he doesn't know this. And because of his kindness in that moment, when I was in the market that night, I met this woman who gave me her phone number and she said, and it had written down another phone number actually, and said, you know, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm not a model because I don't work. And she said, you should go to Hong Kong. And I was like, I don't want to go to another country where I don't know anyone, don't speak the language, don't know a soul. Like, I just can't do it. I'm just too sad. Like, I don't. She just said, I think they'll get you in Hong Kong. I just think that it's a very international city, and I think you'll do very well there. And I was like, what? Hong Kong? I never even thought. Hong Kong had probably never crossed my mind in my life.
Shaboom. as a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and we'll meet again.
So you're listening to this. At this point, this woman, people are just drawn to you for whatever reason, and she's telling you, you should go to Hong Kong.
She writes down a phone number for me. And I go back to the hotel. I have the corn incident in the lobby. I go to my room. I'm bawling my eyes out. And you know this man will never understand. You know, because I'm sure to him he thought it was such a small thing. Saving someone money. It's very Asian, you know. I'm sure he just thought, I'll save her some money and that'll help her out. But he doesn't really get fundamentally how that changed my life because it was that one act of kindness that sort of gave me faith again that people can be kind, that there are nice people in the world and that I'm going to take my chances and try to find more of them. But he gave me the confidence, and I called a friend, and I asked to Western Union me enough money to buy a one-way ticket to Hong Kong. I had no clue what I was doing. I flew to Hong Kong, and I called the number. And it was a woman, and she said, well, who are you? And I said, well, I got your number from this lady. And she said, come to my office. So I took a bus with my luggage to her office. And she said, do you have any photos? And I had like two photos at that time, like two photos of myself.
Yeah.
And she's like, she does not know what to do. She's just sort of like, who is this girl and what am I going to do with her? And she said, all right, well, do you have enough money to rent a room at one of the, you know, modeling apartments? And I'm like, I really don't. So she took me in and I slept on her floor for a year until I could afford to rent a room of my own.
Wow, that's right. You
I know.
Yeah,
wow. Yeah, so she really was... my angel.
You then start going up for movies. Hong Kong had a thriving action movie business, right? That was like a big thing in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's the Hollywood of Asia, or has been. I mean, now China has taken over. But Hong Kong, you know, has such a long history of filmmaking, especially the action genre. And, you know, so it really was one of those places. But, you know, I did, you know, Justin, I did like toothpaste and bank commercials and, you know, things like that.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't until, you know, I modeled for like a year. And then after that, it was actually Jackie Chan. At the time, he had a management company where he was looking for like the new young actors, the next generation of action stars. And he was wanting to produce these movies for a younger generation with younger stars in them. And he was kind of looking for his core group of... And they were, I mean, obviously it's Asia, so, you know, they value the boys way more than they ever valued me. But
Oh, really?
They were looking, they were looking for the next wave of young stars, and they chose all these guys, and then they chose, I was one of the girls. I think there was another girl who did like a movie with them, but I don't think she went on to do anything else.
Max, how did you get chosen for that? Like, is it an audition process? Is it a meeting with Jackie Chan?
They started to see me, like, in the papers and on television, and they just were sort of like, who is this girl? And I thought, why are they coming? And so when they came knocking and said, hey,
she's brushing her teeth so much.
And they basically said, you know, we want to sign you. And I said no.
Oh, wow. Why?
Because I was really bad at it. I was really bad at it. And I remember I did a photo shoot with some singer. No, I was, I hated it. Really, I had no confidence. I mean, I had zero. Well, I mean, there's nowhere I would have gotten it from. And then, you know, with Asians, when they think something about you, they just tell you. They don't try to placate the situation. They don't try to pump you up. They're just like, you suck and you shouldn't be here. And you're like, oh, okay.
Wow. So at that point when you're now Jackie Chan, who... Were you like, holy shit, what the fuck is happening? Were you excited?
Some people say like, oh, well, somebody that big and famous offered you something, you don't take it? Like, how stupid. Oh, I thought the opposite. I thought if somebody that big and famous is offering you something and you take it and you can't do it, you're really never, ever going to recover from that, right?
Oh, yeah, the expectations, the pressure from that.
Right,
that's true.
And by the way, my instincts were completely correct because I ended up working with him for 7 years. And his expectations are incredibly high.
You not feel like you reached those expectations? You like?
I don't think anyone around him feels that they reached those expectations.
Oh, wow.
I think that's sort of the syndrome, you know? It's sort of, you want him to be proud of you, but he is the kind of man who has worked his ass off to get what he has. And he has been through so much hardship in his life, and he really earned every second of his fame and his notoriety and his wealth. He really has. I don't know anyone who works harder.
He's driven.
He's really driven. Like, Tom Cruise works as, like, those are the two hardest working men. I've never seen two men that work harder. Yeah. And so you sort of look at the result of their life and career, you know, as a result of how hard they work, and you go, well, yeah, I get it. I get why you have what you have, and I think you have earned it.
So with Jackie Chan, because you're working with this like really driven person, do you yourself ever feel like you've reached a point where he's impressed and you feel fulfilled? What were those 7 years like? I don't think I've ever asked you this.
No, because there is no, you can't impress or fulfill someone who's not fulfilled or impressed with themselves.
Right.
Yeah. So he is so driven and such a hard worker that he never feels for himself. I mean, someone who has his enormous amount of wealth, fame, and notoriety. I mean, there's no one like him, right? I would argue that he's one of the most unique entertainers out there. And yet he's not satisfied with what he's done. He's always fighting to be more and give more and do more. And a person like that really doesn't look at other people and say, oh, that's really great. I mean, they just don't. They can't. Yeah. So no, that never happened. It wasn't like, hey, great job. No.
Well, then when are you enjoying? Is there a part of you that do you feel like you're getting better at what you're doing? You must be doing a lot of martial arts training at that point.
Well, I do. And like Jackie has a team of like 10 to 12, whatever stunt guys who are experts in all disciplines. And if you know Jackie's movies and you know his team, you can see that he's always fighting the same people in his movies because you can't just fight with Jackie Chan. You have to fight at a certain level. So no matter who the actor is or whatever the situation is, it's always his guys he's fighting.
Yeah, it's like the Harlem Globetrotters always playing the same team.
Exactly. You have to because your skill sets are not matched. Maybe it's Jackie Chan, but you know what I'm saying. Like, they know what he wants.
Yeah.
He knows what they need. And they're able to give us a performance that's just like mind-blowing. Like, not anything you've ever seen before.
Did you ever get hurt, like, training with them?
Yeah. I mean, I like tore my inner thigh and like things were just like, I just went too far, but you know, no broken bones or anything, which is very, very strange. But, cause I mean, I could have easily gotten so hurt for so many reasons, but,
could you just make up one just for the podcast, just to make it sound?
Oh, like a well, I did. I actually cracked my shin. There was a stunt with this.
Oh, that'll work. Okay.
Yeah, this coordinator, this guy Ting Su Dong, was he's like a really really famous like old school coordinator, and he directed this movie that I did with him, and he was like, you know, we'll just put you on top of a ladder, and then when he kicks you, the wire will just like you know, ratchet you back. And I'm like, on a ladder? That seems really unstable. And he goes, yeah, but you know, you're hooked up to the wires, so it doesn't matter. And I'm like, what? That's it. I still don't. So, but the guy flying at me, who's doing like the flying kick, was supposed to like hit me in the stomach. And I had a pad on my stomach. I mean, it still hurts, but like you have a pad at least, so his shoe is not like cutting your stomach open. But he, there was no real, it was so not precise. And so what happened was he ended up like launching himself off one ladder, and I'm like on another ladder. And it was this dangerous. And he ended up falling short. So what he did was instead of like getting me in the torso where I was padded, he kicked me like did a flying kick to my shin.
Oh, God.
I know. Oh, it was God. Really, I thought I was going to die. What? And so, of course, I fell off the ladder.
Oh, my God. Wait, Mags, are there not as many like regulation? Do they not have the same safety measures?
Regulations?
As they do
here? There's no regulations.
Oh, none. Oh, okay. Oh,
there's
my
no
God.
Like safety officer. No, there's none of that. None of that. Especially back then.
Are you opening a box?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, I opened weird. Cookies. Sorry, guys.
That's funny that box of cookies sounded like you're opening some big package. So when you do stunts like this, it's not like you can say in America, you can say to the coordinator, they don't let actors in America do stunts basically.
Dangerous. Do like at a certain level. Yeah, at a certain level, like
unless
Tom
you're
Cruise,
Tom Cruise,
like, you can't tell him not to do something if he wants to do it.
Right,
he'll do it.
Right,
right.
Yeah,
but
for the most part, when actors are like, I did all my own stunts, it's like, no, you didn't. Like these incredibly precise, trained stunt people did the dangerous ones, but there, and this is where you cut your teeth and your chin. you had to do your own stuff, and you didn't have.
I did. And and here's where I kind of made my mark. I, on this one particular movie, weirdly, the same movie we were talking about, I had four different stunt women and they were all fired.
Oh my God. Why?
And because I was better than they were.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
No, it's like, I've seen it's you insane. In action. Like, wow.
I do stunts and not get injured, and like the stunt girls would get injured, and they would just screw. There's this enormous hierarchy in Asia where, you know, the coordinator like is the be all end all, and in this case, the coordinator was the director as well, and he's very famous and very well known, and there's you know, there's a reverence that comes with that in Asia, especially. There's a lot of respect for people who have experience and years on you, and so all of the stuntmen and all of his helpers, they're all scared of him.
Wow.
If he says you got to do something or something got to be done, people just do it. There's no like, oh, is it safe? Like, oh my God. So that's the school I come from, right? And so I get back to the States. I get Mission Impossible. It's my first movie in the U.S. And I'm doing my fights and doing my stuff. And I'm getting all these compliments, like all these Americans. Because, you know, Americans overdo it anyway, right? Americans say shit they don't mean, right? Oh my God, you look amazing. You know, all this bullshit. They'll support you and they'll try to make it better for you. But like Asians won't do that, right? So
they kiss your ass more. Yeah.
They kiss your ass more. They do. And there's a little bit, I mean, it's sometimes it's nice and sometimes it's fake, like whatever, like anywhere, I guess. Yeah. But I got back and I'm doing this movie and everyone's like, you're so amazing. You're so this and you're all these. So I'm getting all these compliments and
you never heard that there.
I don't know how to react. I don't know what to say. It makes me feel weird. Like no one's ever told me I've done a good job. No one's ever. It was so strange. It was like having like an abusive parent, right? And then going to your aunt's house, who's like really nice and buys her kids whatever they want.
Right.
You know, and you're like, can I have a drink? Funny. And she gives you a menu of juices and sodas you can have. And you're like, what? What?
She's like, why are you wincing?
She passes you the soda, you cower.
Just leave it there. I'll open it on my own. You know, it's funny.
Because you're crying?
I noticed, I worked with several Japanese actors last year. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Takahiro Hira and Yosuke Kobazuka.
Sure.
They're such great guys. And so, I'm talking about professional. They were... Never complained.
Yeah,
always on time.
Oh, yeah. Never.
Just the best.
Never. Always.
But They told me, Tak said, he, in fact, is moving to Hawaii, or maybe he already has, because the system there in Japan is so different than it is here. The most striking thing is that the agents, some agents take like 50% of in commissions.
Some
it's between
more.
Like some more. Wow. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. It's like that in Hong Kong as well.
Like 50, between 50 and 70%, some of them.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And they tell you, they tell you what to do. It's not like, you know, and Yosuke and Takahiro, they're big actors there. And yeah, and they, I couldn't get over it. Tak would say, no, if you have to do, they'll tell you, you have to do this travel show. You have to host this thing. And that to me, there's no autonomy. There's very little autonomy.
Yeah, there's a lot of bullying that goes on too. Mm. You know, it's sort of like, if you don't do this, we're not going to give you this, or you're not going to get that, or, you know, people are going to, you know, you'll never work again in this way. There's a lot of threats.
By the way, you came over after, people might not know this, you were in Hong Kong for like, how many years? Eight, 9 years?
7 years, 7 years.
7 years.
7 years. Oh.
Mm-hmm. And so what brought you, was it Tom Cruise? Did somebody see movies that, because you had been doing a bunch of movies.
Yeah, no, it was J.J. Abrams. It was J.J. Was told about me. And apparently he had, you know, J.J. is very specific with his casting. And he, I guess, had read a bunch of girls for Mission Impossible and just was like, no, I haven't found her yet.
Where did he saw a movie you were in?
I'm actually not totally clear what he saw, but I got into the room. April Webster, you know April, right, from Paramount. You know, she's an amazing casting director. She's one of the top, but also like such a good human. She, I think, maybe had presented me. Maybe she saw something I did. I don't know what it was. And he said, yes, I want to see her. So I fly in from Hong Kong. And you know the jet lag. When you fly from Asia to LA, the jet lag hits you at about 3 p.m. You're done. Yeah. And so I flew in that night. I was so sick. I don't know what happened. I got the flu, something. I woke up the next day and I thought I was dying. And I called April and I was like, oh my God, like my fever was so high. I was delirious. It was like 105.
Oh, holy shit.
And I didn't know what to do. I know. And she said, come down to the studio. Let's talk and work you through this. And I said, what time is my audition? And she's like, 3 o'clock. Of course, like right at the time when you're like jet lag hits you and you want to die. Oh. And I was on top of that. I was sick. So I went down to Paramount and she's like, this is your movie. Like, I know this is your movie. You're her. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so she kind of like took care of me until 3 o'clock, like got fluids in me. Like, I mean, she did what she could. I was obviously very, very ill. So I go in, I had to read 3 scenes for JJ and I read the 3 scenes for him. And I went from being so cold, they had to put a blanket over me because I was shaking and my teeth were chattering, to sweating so profusely that I was wiping my forehead with my whole arm. And so, you know, the stages of fever, right? And so I did the 3 scenes and I had nothing left. I didn't know. I did the scenes and I just sat there and he looked at me and JJ said, I will do anything to have you in this movie.
Oh my God.
And he said, let's do this. Like, my reaction to being offered one of the biggest movies of all time was, I think I need to go to the hospital. So I went to the hospital.
He's like, oh, she's so excited. She's going to faint. She's got to go to the hospital.
So I was in the hospital, and I think it was like a kidney infection.
Oh,
it was something
God.
Really bad where like the
Jesus,
fever.
Jesus, man.
And,
I didn't know
and
that.
And I ended up. Yeah, kind of didn't know what had happened. And I ended up back in my hotel room like a couple days later. And I remember I woke up from a night of just sweating and the fever had finally broke and I was now on antibiotics or whatever it was. And I woke up and I'm squinting and I look in the corner of my room and I see the biggest basket I have ever seen in my life. Like it was like the size of a car, like a smart car. And it was just like snacks and things and whatever. And I'm like, who the fuck do I know in LA? I don't know anyone in LA. Like, how could somebody have given me a gift?
I know where this is going.
Right? And so I walk up to the thing. It's got the little card. And I open the card and it says, welcome to a great mission. Love, Tom and JJ.
Oh my God.
And that's
God.
When it really hit me that I had gotten the movie because I didn't really remember that I got
You must have been delirious when you got cast.
I was delirious. I was delirious. But I mean that. Oh, I was genuinely delirious. I didn't know what was happening.
You must have thought, it'd be funny if, now that you, JJ, what he responded to was like how feverish you were and you were sweating. Maybe he thought you were like in the scene. And
he probably thought I was a much better actor than I actually am.
Yeah. He's like, when you start shooting it, he's like, what's happened? Where's all the sweat and her hands shaking? And what happened to all that?
Remember the audition when you were good?
Yeah, it was funny.
But you know what was, you know what was weird is before I walked in, I'll never forget, April said to me, she said, it's 10 minutes, Maggie. You're going to read three scenes. And I was like, okay. Like I was so sick. And she said, look at me. If you get through this, you will change your life in 10 minutes.
No pressure.
And I was like, oh my God. And so I went into the room and I remember feeling that way. And the minute he said action, there was nothing sick about me.
Right. Well, there was nothing. It's adrenaline. I bet. It's people talk about having superhuman moments, and that was your moment where you needed to lift a car off of somebody. I mean, like,
that's pretty much.
I'm a little disappointed. Yeah. JJ wasn't like, your mission, should you choose to accept it? Like, he didn't work that into saying that you got the part.
No, he did. He was tired.
He had a fever too. And
he was trying to get people cast. Well, Tom was promoting War of the Worlds at the time. So he was all around the world. Yeah. He just started dating Katie. So it was like a big hoo-ha. P.S. I was living overseas for 7 years. I didn't know who Katie was, and I didn't know what that meant. And I had to have Carrie Russell explain to me what was happening.
You didn't have Dawson's Creek in Hong Kong?
I didn't have Dawson's Creek in Hong Kong, and I didn't see the Oprah episode. And I didn't know any of that. So Carrie's like, wait a minute, you don't know. And she was like, did you see Dawson's Creek? I'm like, no. And then she's like, oh, Katie, she's an actress. I'm like, I don't know who that is.
She's like, tell me you saw Felicity.
Right, exactly. I'm a big Felicity fan, but I never saw Dawson's Creek. So she took me to lunch one day and was like, Maggie, like, let me just tell you what's happening here. And I was like, this girl's the greatest. And we're still friends. Like, Carrie Russell is one of the coolest. Like, I landed on this big movie with two of the coolest actresses on the planet, Carrie Russell and Michelle Monaghan. And it was like, I mean, to enter on that level with girls who are that cool and that inclusive and that amazing it's all downhill from there, really.
And then you work on Die Hard, and that was shortly after.
I worked on Die Hard with Bruce and this other girl. I forget what her name was.
Justin.
Oh, Justin. Justin.
Yeah. Those girls also must have been, as everyone on Die Hard was, so impressed by your like natural martial arts. That must give you a lot of confidence to have those martial arts skills, does it?
Well, my thing is that, like, physicality, like, there's no question, like, I'm not those MMA girls. So, I mean, yeah, sure, they could probably beat up any guy they meet. Like, I'm definitely not that person. But I understand, like, the male physicality versus the female physicality under most circumstances is not comparable, obviously.
I imagine you could beat me up. Like, how many
you
would it
for
take?
Sure. But I mean, what I'm saying is, like, if it's in a...
What about Togo? What about, we have a mutual friend, John Togo. Could you beat John Togo?
You know, Togo's pretty thick.
He's thick. Yeah, he's pretty big.
He's thick. He seems like he'd be really strong. I mean, don't quote me on that, but I feel like...
Well, he listens to the show. If a strong person, like a strong man, came at you, though, in an alley, do you feel confident that you could defend yourself? Not necessarily beat them up, but like...
Right, defend and deflect as probably better than a lot of people. I would say yes. I would say that's true. But the other thing with women, not that this is like a free women's self-defense class, but I had this incident last year where I was walking. I was in Santa Monica, which, as you know, Santa Monica. But Santa Monica is shady as hell. Like, people don't understand. Like, there's a lot of weirdness that goes on in this very rich area. So I was walking from the farmer's market to my car, which was parked in one of those side alleys. Because I'm me, I had noticed that there was a guy in a hoodie following me for two blocks. And I was aware that he crossed the street, and I was aware that he's now behind me, and I was aware that it had been a few blocks. And I was also aware that I was walking further away from the farmer's market. So there's no one else parked in these side alleys because it's all tow-away zones, right? But I had a special permit for my friend's business. So I'm like, okay, so this guy's, it's been two blocks and he crossed the street. Now he's behind me and now I'm okay. Now I'm going to take a right and I'm walking further down the alley. He just took a right. Now he's still behind me. Okay. So I moved to the left and I was definitely scared. I mean, he was a big guy. He was like 6'2" and the whole thing. And he had his hood up and his face was covered on purpose. My car was parked to the left. So I start to move over to the left, which doesn't give him any room to, he's got to be walking on the right. And I immediately, you know, open my trunk and I'm putting all my fruits and vegetables down. And he's sort of parallel to me now, like almost parallel to me. And I'm watching him and he walks sort of past me by about a foot and then he starts to slow down a little. So I'm like, okay. And I'm not physically more powerful than this person. I can see in his physicality that he would overpower
me. He's 106
pounds. I put my groceries down. I said, no, I'm not going to be bullied and I'm not going to be made to feel afraid. So I just started screaming and I said, you know, and I just started swearing at him. And I said, oh, now you're slowing down. I said, what? You think you scare me following me, you motherfucker? And I'm screaming from the top of my lungs. I'm like, you think you scare me? You don't fucking scare me. Keep fucking walking, you stupid ass. I mean, I'm screaming my head off. And
you out.
This is the last thing an assailant wants, you know? And so I'm small, but I'm mighty in my spirit. And so I'm going to scream and defend myself before you ever touch me. And he ran.
Wow, no shit.
Well, first of all, I'm drawing attention. Like anybody
who's
anywhere around.
It'd be so funny if he was like just a fan of yours, if he was like, I just wanted an autograph.
With my hood up and my hands in my pockets.
He has a big Nikita poster.
Yeah, he rolls it out. He rolls it, scrolls it open.
Get the fuck out of here. Oh, gosh, she's so much friendlier on TV.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply. If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and I'm gonna meet again.
I'm going to put you on the spot because this is something you can't do with an animal. And one of my favorite stories of yours is when you were pursued by coyotes.
I had to use my bike to defend myself and my pit bull so that this coyote didn't eat her.
That was Scuba?
That was Scuba. Yeah, that was the Coombs.
Wow. Yeah, the Coombs.
Yeah. And you remember Coombs was a strong dog. And she
She
was aggressive, too. She was aggressive pit bull. She was abused, and I took her in. And to see a pit bull afraid, I was like, oh, my God, that coyote's going to kill her in front of me.
So what happened? So you were in the valley, right? And you were like – you were walking Scuba and you just noticed this coyote. Was it one coyote following you guys?
Just one, but there's never one, right? You see one, but there's more. And so and as we got closer to it, I was riding my bike. My dog was running. I went, okay, well, we're just going to keep going. And we passed it, but we were going up a hill and it was a dead end. So the only way home was – down that hill past that same coyote who on my way up the hill started to trot after us.
as we rode down the hill, I looked at my dog and I just said, Scuba, we're just going to, you and I are going to book it. I'm going to pedal so fast and you're going to run and we're just going to run all the way home. Okay. And she was like, you could just see the fear. She knew she was being hunted. And so we take off down the hill and the coyote has actually waited behind a bush. And then as we're speeding down the hill, it takes off parallel to us and is running at the same speed as my bike.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. I have never been so scared in my life. And then I broke too hard. I fell off my bike. My dog's leash, it was the biggest disaster. And then as it's running towards it, it beelined to my dog. I picked up my bike and I used the entire bicycle and I was slamming it on the ground and screaming to try and deter it on some level. Yeah. And it did a little bit. But I could tell he was just really trying to make a circle around me. It was as if I wasn't even there.
Oh my God. What's Scuba doing?
It acted like I didn't exist. Scuba was terrified. She was hiding behind me and I'm screaming and I'm so scared and I'm crying. Now I'm crying. And I see this jogger in the distance and I'm like, please help me. My dog's going to die. Like I'm crying and screaming. And he's like, oh my God. It's the guy with the hoodie. Yeah, same guy.
He's like, no, not you.
Another guy, different guy.
Yeah.
So he was just a morning jogger and he came and picked up a bunch of rocks and was throwing them at the coyote. And he was like, run, keep running. And I'll keep throwing rocks. Just keep running.
Holy shit.
And that's how I got home.
Wow. And so you've played all these badass women and so many things, Mission Impossible, Die Hard, then the Divergent series, Nikita. Do you ever want to play someone who isn't a badass?
Yes, I am interested in that. And I have a comedy coming out this year, actually, which is going to be really fun.
But what is it?
It's called The Argument. And do you know Jason Schwartzman?
Yeah, I love Schwartzman.
So Schwartzman's brother, do you know Robert?
I have worked with him. I do know Robert. Yes, Robert's great.
Robert directed it. It's this tiny movie. We shot it at his house.
Oh my God! The
for like $100,000 or something, and it was supposed to premiere at Tribeca, and then obviously Tribeca got canceled. So, but I guess the offer still stands, and I know why. So we'll be premiering at Tribeca whenever it comes back.
Oh, that's great! Wait, is Jason in it?
Jason he was gonna be in it. He's not. It's me and Dan Fogler.
Oh, your old buddy. Okay,
my old buddy,
Balls of Fury. Your Balls of Fury castmate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Oh, that's a good cast. I'm glad you're doing a comedy because you are funny and no one knows that. No one's ever, because you've never been funny to anyone.
Well, no.
No, it's not a lot. That's not what people think of you as, but
no,
you are very funny.
We laughed so much. Hard.
Well, I remember the first week that we worked together it was all that stuff in the factory or something. It's when you hold us hostage and then you get into the big fight. This is Die Hard 4.
Oh, in Redondo. Live Free or Die Hard. Yeah.
Live Free or Die Hard. We were way out Redondo. God, we're shooting nights. You're there in these conditions. And I had been working on it for, at that point, like, I don't know, at least a month, I think. And so I kind of understood the need for patience and these different rhythms that had been established. But you're just coming in and you were such a breath of fresh air. It was so fucking fun. And even when we were waiting around and people are getting frustrated and, we were laughing so much.
God for you.
Thank God for you. Yeah.
We were kind of bookended. It was interesting. It was just interesting. You guys know.
Oh, who is that?
Dogs. That's Romeo and Nevaeh.
Oh, yeah, Romeo. Oh, I haven't met Nevaeh. Well, Max, you only have two dogs now.
I only have two dogs, but I just sent you a photo before we got on the podcast. Did you see the photo I sent you?
No. Let me see.
You said we need to talk about that. That's what you said in the text.
Oh, yeah, I did see that, of course. Oh, okay, yeah, the photo.
Yeah,
that's your new dog?
Well, I think so. I think I've committed.
Oh, boy, okay. Okay, so this is important.
Can I run two names by you?
Yes.
Because I need advice.
Hold on.
This.
I have to let people know, because this is not a visual medium, so Maggie sent me a photo of one of the – I've seen a lot of cute puppies in my time. but this thing is ridiculous. It's this little, ridiculous. Kind of a wiry-haired It's got a dark nose. The rest of it is beige, different mottled colors. It is so fucking cute.
No, you know what it looks like? It looks like a tiny little German Shepherd, wiry terrier.
God, I wish I could show people. It's just a tiny
German Shepherd. That's what it looks like.
Yes. Yeah. But its ears are pointed down. It's got this incredibly innocent. It's like, whatever. It's a pup. It's a really cute
puppy. It kind of has a faux hawk. You see his little mohawk that sits above his head?
Yes. It looks like it's been, it needs to be cleaned maybe, but in a cute way. You know, it's got that, it's the wiry hair. It looks like a little ragamuffin. It's so cute. First, I want to give some context. Maggie has been rescuing dogs since you were
my whole life
in Hong Kong.
My entire life.
When Maggie and I met that week on Die Hard, you had at the time 7 dogs, I think.
Yeah, all rescues, all street dogs.
And all of them were biggish,
pretty much, with the exception of like two of them.
I thought just one, Mr. P, right?
No, and then I acquired a little terrier from the Detroit, Detroit, Michigan shelter, city shelter called Chewy.
Oh, yeah.
Chewbacca. Chewbacca.
But at one point, the best was when I didn't know Chewy well, but the Mr. P was a little chihuahua, and he was the alpha of the group. This is the best part.
And he was 3 pounds.
Yeah, he was the tiniest little – and he ruled the roost. He was like such an officious – he was so like bitchy to the other dogs.
He was.
And they all listened to him. They all like put up with it. And he'd be like, no. And these big dogs like Wiley, they huge German Shepherds and pit bulls.
Like
they would all fall.
85-pound German Shepherd. Yeah.
Yeah. All fall in line like, sorry, sir.
He was like, no, you listen to me. Here's how it's going down.
That's how I heard Mr. P in my head.
No, but you know, do you ever remember the first time because you thought he was so cute like everyone else, and you were like, hey, Max, where's Mr. P? And I said, he's in my trailer. We're on Die Hard. We're in the hair and makeup trailer getting done in the morning. And you said, hey, Max, since you're still in hair and makeup, do you mind if I go to your trailer just go see him? And I said,
yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. And you were like, why did you pause? And I said,
yeah, because you were.
Just go in with confidence. And you went, what? What does that mean?
I'm not capable of that.
Well, I told you to do that. And then I continued in the process getting my makeup done. And half an hour had gone by. Like, I didn't know where you – I was like, where's Justin? Because I thought you were coming back. And so I go to look for you. And I'll never forget the scene. I open the door to my trailer. And I honestly thought I was going to die laughing that morning.
I don't remember
door,
what.
And it's my couch, whatever couch it was in the trailer, and it was a bit longer than most couches. And on one end, you were sitting all the way jammed into the corner, and then on the other end, all the way to the right, was Pedro, and you were facing each other, and he was going, ah. You couldn't get any closer.
I didn't make any headway.
That was as close as you got.
So much for the confidence.
you knew exactly
what you were dealing with. You're like, oh, I can break this guy. I never, although in my defense, Mr. P, you underplayed, I think, how aggressive Mr. P could be.
You know, then that was an asshole move by me.
No, it's just in your nature. It's like because you don't want to alarm, you don't want to fill a fear-based person like me with more fear. Who was the one? It was a German Shepherd. It wasn't Wiley.
Caesar.
Caesar was like a very, there was something in his, like a spirit of some special creature in him. Yeah.
He was the love of my life.
Yeah,
I only lost him. It's going to be 2 years in September.
Yeah,
but he is still with me all the time.
Yeah,
like
that was a special.
We're so connected. Like we're just so. I don't know if I ever told you that. You know, the last week of his life, which I kind of knew was the last week. I decided. I've decided a few things, but. I was so distraught that he was getting weaker that I wasn't really noticing the signs and the support that he had to cross over soon. And I'm in my yard and I'm like talking to my friend on the phone and this hawk swooped like over my head so close that I look up and I'm like, what? I've never seen a hawk that looks like this. I've never seen a hawk that looks like this. Mm-hmm. It was mostly white, which they don't have in LA. It landed in this enormous tree that overlooked the house. And that bird showed up about a week before he died. And then it left after he died. And I never saw it again.
Yeah, like I said, I've witnessed like spiritual moments between you and animals. And for anyone listening who's like, okay, that's nonsense, I probably would have thought that before I met you, before I knew somebody that was so in tune with – I've never known anyone to be so in tune with dogs, with other creatures. They're like – I feel like you're their protector. I think Caesar knew what you did for him. How you saved his life and the lengths to which you went to do that. And I think that bonded you guys in a way that I'm telling you, like, I wonder if I'll ever in my lifetime see that kind of connection between an animal and a person.
Well, what's funny is that when I had to put him down, Justin, the doctor who came over, you know, I sang to him and he died in my arms and she took him away and then she wrote me a card like a week later. You know, they're always like, thank you for your business or whatever. She wrote me a card, sent me a card and wrote this letter in it. Or she said to me, because the doctor was crying, which I thought was interesting because I'd not seen that, you know, with a doctor putting your dog down. And she wrote me this letter.
So desensitized.
Right, exactly. And she said, I have to apologize for like the amount of emotion that came out of me during my visit with you and your beautiful boy. But she said, I could not contain my emotion because I had never seen a love like that.
Yeah.
It was so, it moved me deeply to watch you transition him out of the physical body into the vibrational body and the trust that existed between the two of you, and the love was so, it was deeply moving to me, and I didn't know how to control it.
Didn't you have an interaction with Caesar Milan? And Caesar Milan was like, am I making this up, where he was like, you kind of know what you're doing.
he did, but he also told me that I gave Caesar, my dog Caesar, too much power, because when I adopted him, I was single, and I gave him the boyfriend position. And I never made him give up his status.
Oh, interesting. So what was that like when you had human boyfriends?
Anytime there was like a disagreement or an argument with a human boyfriend, he would get up very slowly, like a cat. He moved like a cat. He was like a jungle cat.
Yeah, he did. He was graceful.
Yeah. He was graceful and very sleek. And so he would get up very slowly from the sofa and he'd walk over and he'd stand in between the two of us and he'd look whoever the gentleman was dead in his eye, his back to me, and calmly just stand there. I understand there's a disagreement going on right now, but if anything gets more heightened than my liking, I'm going to go after you, dude. So just so you know, I'm here.
Oh, my God.
Like, look at me.
Such a great.
But then on the flip side, I had the dog Teo. Remember Teo?
Yeah.
Oh, I had this dog Teo, who was like a real healing dog. So and so Teo, if I was in an argument with anyone, Teo would, whoever was losing the argument, it's not necessarily who was right, but whoever was losing in the argument, he would go to and comfort.
Oh, he was so like empathetic, like a compassionate.
So empathetic, just so sensitive and kind of red when there was a void. Yeah, Teo was my gay dog.
Teo was.
He was painfully good looking.
Beautiful. Yeah,
he was like, it was a very, very light beige. Yeah, with the pink nose.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
Oh, I love Teo.
Teo was, he was my gay son.
I want to mention what you're doing now. You have. Maggie has a company called Keep Up. I'll let you talk about a little bit about it because it's fascinating how it came to be and how sustainable it is. What motivated that? It's a clothing company, but maybe talk a little bit about how that came to be.
You know, about 10 years ago, I was really fascinated by all the new technology that was happening in the sustainable space as far as like yarns and fabrics went. And I was sort of, I don't know, there was something about it that was really, I knew that fashion was very wasteful, particularly fast fashion. And I was trying to research ways to make things better, you know, to make them work better for us. The fabrics at the time, the yarn that was coming out was not, it just wasn't up to par yet. And then a couple years ago, I started to look more into it as technology started to get better. And I realized that we were getting to a point where we could make polyester that from recycled materials that was almost virgin, almost undetectably virgin.
That
we were producing all
from
kinds
bottles,
of different
right,
fabrics
Max?
From
so,
bottles.
So this is coming from
different right. different sources. You can recycle fishing nets, but all plastic. Yeah. So different just sort of really it's really trash. I mean, you're reusing trash and you're collecting it and they're melting it down and turning it into flakes and those flakes are then spun into yarn.
God. That is so cool.
Yeah.
And these are so everyone's seen the pictures of the masses of plastic floating in the ocean and they hear the statistics about how much plastic remains in the ocean. So this is a way to actually do something about this. This is like a very practical way to combat that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we say that we're turning waste into want, right? So things that would just end up in a landfill, things that would end up in the ocean, things that are disposable, because we live in such a disposable culture now, you know? I mean,
sure.
Single use, all this stuff.
Yeah.
We decided at the time when, by the way, plastic isn't it's a really incredible invention, but what happened was, because they were going to make so much money off the invention of plastic, there was no regulation around it, right? So there was no bird's eye view. There was no bigger thinking about, okay, well, we're going to produce all of this, but what are we going to do with it once it exists, right? It's going to pile up and there's going to be nowhere for it to go. I've been an ocean activist for, 15 years. And for me, I didn't want to start a company that just made another commodity that was going to be thrown away. I wanted it to have purpose and I wanted it to have education behind it. And I wanted to really, really, truly put the recycling, create a recycled fabric that was so unique
really
to the market.
Practical.
Yeah. Practical, but that was so unique to the market that hadn't been done yet. And there were companies that I really loved, like Patagonia and different companies who have always, Volcom, different surf companies have always used recycled, an element of recycled yarn in their clothing. Hmm. But I hadn't seen anyone who'd ever done 100% recycled blend, like really figured out what that blend was and that they could bring a garment to market that was 100% recycled. And so that's what I set out to do. And so I went to find all these textile manufacturers and said, hey, does this exist? And they're like, no. And if you want to create that, you're going to have to spend the money for R&D and make it happen because it doesn't exist right now. So that's what I did.
Wow. So when somebody says that to you, somebody who is in the business and is in that occupies like a knowledgeable position in that space, how do you then hear that and then go out and create it and find it?
I'm kind of one of those people where if you tell me that I can't do it, I'm going to.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do it because I need to prove you wrong. I'm doing it because I believe that I can.
Okay. What is your most commonly used emoji?
Oh, the laughing. Always the laughing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You mean the laugh crying?
The laugh crying. Yeah, the laugh crying.
Okay. It's funny. It's hard to pivot from something so like significant and special that you're doing, like saving the world and getting rid of ocean plastic to.
Right.
So what's your most commonly used emoji?
But this is,
Listen, I would put them on par.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Not the recycle emoji. Weird. Okay. Yeah. Laughing emoji is a good one. Do you write out, you say that when you find something funny, do you do LOL? Do you do ha ha ha?
You know, what's funny is I do ha 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 on my microphone, which is the dorkiest and worst way to do ha 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 because it does a space in between each ha.
Oh, really? Ha, ha, ha.
Pretty much, yeah. So it's, mm-hmm. it's, I don't know what people are thinking when they get that from me, but
oh,
it's
that's
the
funny.
Microphone.
I'll be looking. It's funny. I was like, oh, I never get that from you. That must mean you never laugh at the text I sent. I get a lot of question marks and that quizzical emoji, the guy who's like, hmm.
You guys scratch your chin.
If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Potato chips are just so great.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Salt and vinegar.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Favorite movie of all time?
But, you know, my favorite movie for a very long time was a movie called Betty Blue. It's a French film. The story is about a woman who's mentally ill. But she's in love with this man. And it's their love story. And, like, in the end, like, she's so destructive. Like, he can't save her. Like, there's no, like, he loves her so much.
Spoiler alert.
It's really painfully beautiful love story. And not everyone you love, you can save. You know what I mean? We all kind of know that, I think.
If you had to live somewhere else, where would it be?
Somewhere else. Like fantasy-wise or somewhere practical?
Mm-hmm. No, both. Like practical for your life, that would be...
Oh.
You know, I guess...
Well, I also want to live in Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I have actual plans to live there, too.
If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, whom you've never met, who would they be?
I think that Jesus would be one of them. Who doesn't want to have dinner mm-hmm. with Jesus?
Yeah, I know.
And
what's
just
all the
find
fuss
out
about?
Every, I mean, all the prophets. I would want to have dinner with the prophets. I want to have dinner with Buddha, Muhammad, and Jesus.
Who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh, I mean, there's no Kermit.
Kermit. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I like the scientist in Beaker too, but I also like the girl who plays the harp.
You mean Janet? You like the one who's like that, Janet?
The one who's always like, yeah, man. It's you.
Yeah.
Oh, she
I didn't know she played the harp. Yeah. We were just talking about Janet.
Some of those. Oh, her name's Janice.
Yeah, Jen is, because it's everything. She's like a little out of it. She's kind of fried.
Yeah, she's always like a little out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love her.
You have
her
a
so
little
much.
Janice in you sometimes.
I do. I love Janice. Wow.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Invisibility.
Yeah. That's it. That's hard to be.
Yeah.
What would you do with it? What's the first stop you would make? Where would you go?
Oh, I would go to like, I have like all these vigilante dreams of like being a liberator.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I have all these dreams of like sneaking into like people who traffic children and experiment on animals. Yeah. Like I just have these dreams of me going in like invisible. And then once in there, creating havoc and releasing all these defenseless lives. And I mean, it's just a dream.
If you could be reincarnated as a non-human animal, what would it be?
A non-human animal. Ooh, you know, I would probably like to see the depths of the oceans, to be honest. So.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe one of the great whales, you know, maybe a humpback or a fin whale or an orca. I don't know. One of the.
I remember that picture you sent me when you swam with a whale shark.
Oh,
that's one of the coolest images.
I didn't think
it was you. Oh, it's like a screensaver.
Mask. I know.
Yeah. In fact, I still wonder if it's you.
I was going to say it's good lie. Well,
yeah, it's really good. Works. If anyone's going to pull off that lie, it's you.
Okay.
would you rather be called unattractive or unfunny?
Oh, unfunny would be horrifying.
Yeah, that'd be rough.
Especially you know, if people were like, yeah, she's nice, but she's just like, she tried to be funny and she's not.
Oh, God. Oh, the nightmare.
That would be sad.
Which Golden Girl do you most identify with? Dorothy, Blanche, Rose, or Sophia?
Well, who's the funnest? Blanche.
Blanche, yeah, she is. She's the good time Charlie.
Well, you know what I want? Huh. My dream, funny that you brought up the Golden Girls, is my dream is to have four donkeys and name them after the Golden Girls.
Oh, why
Wouldn't
donkeys?
Would that be just?
Yes, that'd be
because
funny.
I'm obsessed with donkeys.
Oh, really? Oh, you should.
Do you have, like, in an unhealthy...
Really? I didn't know that.
I think I know these answers, but dogs versus cats?
Dogs. But I'm an animal person, so I don't want to exclude anyone.
Beatles, Rolling Stones. Beatles or Rolling Stones?
You can't do that to a person.
Okay, sorry.
But if I had to pick one, it's the Beatles. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Okay, good. That was the right answer.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I know how I am going to remember you. Not that I'm going to die first. I didn't mean to suggest that. You're going to die first. I think you're going to live to be like 120. But how do you want people to remember you? How do you want to be thought of, I suppose?
I think I just want people to know that I did the best that I could for everyone and everything that I cared about.
Well, that is such an understatement, but it does. And you, I think, more than have. I've always just so admired you and love you. And I'm so glad we got to do this.
I love you more. Thank you for letting me blab on and on about the things that I care about, because it means a lot to me. Oh, thanks for giving me a platform.
We're not rolling. We should start recording. Sorry, I've made that joke every time. It's so stupid. I've been looking forward to this. This was fun. All right. I love you. I'll talk to you soon.
Love you. Okay. Bye, guys. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
For doing this.
Okay. Bye.
So
that happened. Oh, what was yours like? Why did you do it like that?
I thought you meant my experience of listening to the interview.
How was it for yours like? Oh. No, that was, you know, that was just real gratitude that I got to have that with her. Because we're in quarantine now, and it's just nice on a very personal, selfish level. It was nice.
Where
to
was she?
She was in LA. You could hear like birds and stuff in the background.
Yeah.
She was out on her like.
Birds are in New York. I know she lives part time in New York too.
That's true. That's good point. Yeah, she has a place. She has a place in Westchester. I went to see her in Westchester recently, and she was like, we're going to have dinner with my friend. And we went to pick up her friend, Liesl, who was almost 90. I think she was maybe 91. Liesl was the first. Maggie has the most impressive friends.
She wasn't one of the Von Trapp children, was she?
No, but she sounds like she was. No, she was. I think I made that joke. And Maggie's a great laugher, isn't she?
She is, which helps explain your connection, I think.
I know. Selfishly.
You love a good audience.
I do. I do. I'm needy. Needy. Please find me funny. But Liesl it made me laugh because Maggie just has such impressive friends. And she was the first female photojournalist at Life Magazine, or maybe editor of
Photo. Yeah, you told me about that.
And she had the most fascinating stories about photographing Juan Perón. Did I mispronounce that? Juan Perón. Juan,
like,
Perón.
Evita Perón.
Yeah, Eva Perón's husband. And Fidel Castro. And was like chummy with them. And Walt Disney. She had said Walt Disney was basically more of a dick than she's like Fidel and Juan. These dick people that we think of as being dictators were actually quite charming to her.
And they really put the dick in dictator.
Yeah, well, that was good. As you pull on your mustache. Gross.
Wow.
You have a dictator mustache.
I do?
You were excited by that?
Kind of, because dictators tend to have really full, lush mustaches.
It is full. Like a Saddam Hussein. Yeah, that's true. Stalin had it.
Stalin, yeah.
Hussein.
Stalin is like mustache goals.
Yeah, you know,
one of the most evil men who's ever lived, probably. You know, but you know, great mustache.
A great mustache. You know who had a? You know what dictator had a gross mustache?
Wait, let me think. Pol Pot.
Did he even try to have a mustache?
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah.
Wispy. So did
Speaking of Pol Pot,
does Ho Chi Minh? I bet she's never gotten that before. Oh, Gaddafi. Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah,
had a gross,
I'm trying to picture
hair.
His mustache.
Oh, gross facial hair. So did Ho Chi Minh didn't have great.
Well,
anyway, let's get back to Maggie. No mustache on Maggie.
She just is a very impressive human being. I've always thought that.
Yeah,
I've known her for a good decade plus now.
Yeah, she's been over for family meals. Our family loves
her.
Yeah,
we've spent a lot of time with her, and
My
she is remains impressive.
Yeah,
and kind and intelligent, articulate. When she was talking about, and I know, and I had known about her period of struggle in her life, and when she was starting on her career, how she was broke. I had heard her tell a version of that story before, but it remains so hard to picture because when I think of her, I think of someone who is so incredibly put together mm-hmm. and successful and almost regal. She has a kind of regal
poised,
like a princess almost. Yeah. She's like a princess to me. Not like a spoiled, not in the way that she's like spoiled and like full of herself.
She's going to make fun of you for this.
But it's true. She has kind of a regal air about her.
Yeah. There's a sense of pride that she has, even in the way she stands. She has such impressive stature.
Great posture.
Yeah. But, you know, and I don't, this is not my story to tell. And she, and we didn't get too deep into it, but she did suffer a lot of abuse at the hands of men. And she alluded to that. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. But what she doesn't have is any bitterness or animosity. You know, she is very good at letting go. And if not letting go, channeling a lot of her experiences into positive things, positive pursuits.
She mentioned that she people often ask her whether she likes animals more than humans.
Yeah.
And she claimed that she doesn't, that she loves animals, she loves humans, and, she, you know, she doesn't pick one side or the other. But it certainly seems like she prefers animals. And I was wondering, not to psychoanalyze her, but how much of that might have to do with this abuse you're talking about. And also, from her experience in the modeling industry, that sounds really cruel and abusive.
Yeah.
So I think she's had experiences with humans that are less than good.
Yeah.
And so when she sees animals as being, as she says, completely judgment-free, it makes sense to me that she would prefer them. But I wouldn't describe her as an animal person the way I would describe you as an animal person. She has something above and beyond what anyone else has that whom I've met. And she has like a real kinship with animals.
Yeah.
And she's like Ace Ventura.
Yes.
Or Dr. Doolittle.
Except she doesn't talk about her ass.
What's a less flattering reference?
Probably Ace Ventura. She has such conviction. I mean, everything she promotes, all the activism she does comes from a place of such deep, true conviction.
Principles. Extremely principled.
Yes. And I think we have both seen examples of people who are activists more for their own good than something else's.
You've been using the word lovely a lot.
I have. I know.
Have you
noticed
that?
Yes, I noticed it. Oh, my God. That's fine. I noticed in the Leslie Jordan interview.
And, I think pretty much.
Maybe that's where it started.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
You're going to blame Leslie Jordan.
No, I don't really mind it. I also referred to somebody else as being lovely. Oh, did I say?
You said it in this interview.
I did.
You referred to Jay Leno as lovely.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, I guess I am lovely. Thanks.
Lovely. I know. Weird. Well, maybe because Maggie uses it. I also am I'm prone to being very influenced. This is probably not a good thing, something I should brag about, to being influenced by the person I'm talking to, especially if it's somebody I really like admire, like Maggie.
Right. Or someone who has a very distinguishable cadence or something like Sam Rockwell.
Yes, when I'm around
it's
Sam.
It's very hard to not talk like him when you're around him.
I know. I'll start saying, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not just you. I've noticed specifically, everyone starts to sound like him when they spend time with him. She did an impression of her mom, who's Vietnamese, and you did like a half-hearted impression of her after that, and but you didn't really commit to it because you can't.
Yeah, I know. And Maggie does a really good impression, but I can't. We always talk about that. Maggie also teases me a lot about looking a little Asian, and whenever I do something that's good or bad that she deems to be more popular in the Asian community, she kind of points it out.
Right,
It's just fun that we
You also revere the Asian community.
I think I've told this story before, but I was talking to a girl at a bar once and she said, so what percentage Asian are you? And around that time, for whatever reason, people were mistaking me for being part Asian. And I said, oh, I'm not. I'm 0%. She goes, "Not. Come on, seriously, what is it, like 50% Asian? And I said, no, none. And she got really offended. She said, look, I have a friend who's mixed like you and he always denies his Asian heritage. And she stormed away. And I said to her, as well, I would.
She sounds a little unhinged.
Yeah, I think so. Well, are you saying that because she's Asian?
You didn't say that she was Asian.
I didn't?
No.
Oh, that's a key part of the story.
She has a friend who is, is mixed race.
I've been really butchering stories lately.
So she was Asian.
She was Asian, and she said—
Maybe you did say it, and I didn't hear it. I don't think you said it, though.
But the point is, I occasionally get, you know, and I would—
You're flattered by it.
I'm flattered. I would love to be. In fact, when we did that, there was a sponsor who was kind of like a 23andMe sponsor. And
Ancestry.com.
Ancestry.com, right. That was a while ago. That was one of our first sponsors. They never re-upped.
No, but whatever. How many times can you take your get your genetics tested?
That's true. No, but I'm saying, whatever. So when I did that, I was praying that there would be some Asian. I thought it'd be cool to have a little Asian in me. Maggie, there's nobody better to travel with in Asia, in Tokyo.
Except wouldn't it be – isn't it sort of annoying that she's so famous there that you can't go anywhere without people like making a scene?
Yeah, she really is. You've been to Chinatown with her, right? You've been
– No,
well,
I
you
haven't.
Certainly have been to Chinese – to Asian restaurants with me when I mention her. I like to name drop her.
Yeah, you always do.
Yeah.
And they're always like, yeah, I know Maggie Q.
Yeah, they're like, duh.
It's like asking if you know Tom Cruise. Yeah.
I know. It's insulting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she – that's another thing I really love about her is she – I mean, you would never know that she has that level of fame in like a huge part of the world. It's not like she's famous in Reykjavik, Iceland. You know?
Yeah, it's a massive continent.
Yeah.
Asia is a very large place.
And she remains one of the most – famous people there, and she's just such a – I mean, you know her, so.
She was – you guys were talking about the physicality between – difference between men and women and how even though she is a martial artist and she is tough and badass, there are still limitations to that so that – so if she were to encounter like a big, strong man, she wouldn't be able to physically compete with him just – because of the nature of the size difference and the muscle difference. And you got like a little surge of confidence and you were like, oh, so do you think like you could – like you could beat me up or I could – and she was like, oh, you – oh, for sure. But she's like, I was talking more about like, you know, a man, like a man with some muscle. And,
oh, man. There was I can't really tell the full story, unfortunately, which I know is a tease. But there was a day – there was a moment on her first – one of her first days on Die Hard where she was doing a fight scene with Bruce and he was hesitating to do this particular move because he just thought it was unrealistic that Maggie would be able to grab his fist and do this move where she basically twisted his arm behind his back. And the stunt guy, then the director, Len, finally they just said, well, Maggie, why don't you just do it, you know? Bruce was like, come on, there's no way, like, no offense, but come on. And in Bruce's defense, like, he's a pretty big guy. It's and Maggie is quite small. She's, like, thin. And so they did it kind of full speed ahead. They, like, did – Bruce went to punch her in the face, and Maggie, like, fucking lightning. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life. She – her hand shot up, grabbed his fist with her palm and it twisted his arm behind his back. And it all happened so fast and it disarmed Bruce. And he was like, okay, you know. I remember
you telling me that story years ago. So I was under the impression that she could submit any
I think she was actually
tough
being,
guy
you know,
that she comes across in a dark alley.
I think she was actually – well, two things. She may have been being – I think she was being modest. I think she could have – I don't know if she could have taken that guy. Bruce actually isn't – he's sort of my height. He's not that tall. And, you know, he was a little bit older when we did that. And she, you know, the encounter she had with that guy in the hoodie, she said he was like 6'2". That's probably a little different. But, I wonder if she's more of a badass than she even gives herself credit for.
Yeah. She talked about having vigilante dreams. Do you remember that? She has dreams about like
saving
things and like sneaking into buildings to get
the yeah.
And I realized that I mostly have dreams about like missing flights.
Yeah.
And
anxiety.
And anxiety, like being having an exam in college that I'm not prepared for or something. And I think what you dream about really
says a lot about you. Yeah. Oh, I wonder if what it says about me and my dreams lately. I've been having dreams about like not watering plants and you know, I've been having dreams about missing people too, and I guess quarantine dreams. Anyway, did I ever tell you when I went to a she was a big supporter of this animal rights organization called Sea Shepherd, and we went to a fundraiser together. And I bid on this guitar signed by all four Beatles.
Oh, that was with her? Yeah. I remember that guitar.
And I and it was kind of like going once, going twice. And I was like, oh. I thought people – there were a lot of like fancy people, high rollers in there. I got it. I like bid high and I got it. And it turns – and I was like, well, it's going to a good cause, Sea Shepherd. And I didn't regret it or anything. But years later, I found out that – I think
it was
I had
fake,
it.
Right?
It was fake.
You like saw the signatures. It's yes. like Lord Jim, Bob, Todd, and Steve.
Ringo Starlow. Who's that?
She's the best.
She's the best. And she's such a supporter of the show. She's really.
She is?
Yeah. She loves the show.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. All right.
You go on and on all day.
I know. Okay.
Here's a letter.
Andy L. Subject: boyfriend twins. Dear Justin and Christian, longtime listener. Thanks, Andy. First time writer. At the end of your interview with Mo Rocca, your breakdown discussion broached the subject of gay men seemingly being attracted to other men that are just like them. Yes, that might have been offensive. As a gay man myself, I can attest this is true.
All right.
Oh, what a great.
You just got cleared.
Okay. Though it's not an across-the-board phenomenon, it is prevalent enough that it has been given its own term. Boyfriend twins. Oh, I didn't know that. This typically refers to gay men in relationships where they physically resemble one another. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
To the point of being an uncanny resemblance. Ah, I like that, boyfriend twins. But if you ask me, this can also extend to men who have very similar tastes, social dispositions, and upbringing, whether or not they look the same. I don't understand this myself. I've always felt that there is value in the unknown, and the true adventure of a romantic relationship is discovering new things with a new person and giving them the same in return. That's how we grow and become better as a whole. Well said, Andy. Anyhow, to end this rant, Christian might have the right of it. You would make a good catch for any gay man. Thanks, Andy. I feel like I said that wrong. For any gay man. Gay man, I said.
What's the difference?
I don't know. How would you say that?
Any gay man. You'd make a good catch for any gay man.
It should be for any gay man, right?
I don't know how he was saying it.
I wonder.
For any gay man.
Yeah, for any gay man.
Because it wouldn't make sense if you wouldn't be a catch for any straight man.
Right.
So
regardless,
the emphasis wouldn't be on the gay.
It's just a what a flattering thing to say. Personally, I think
any gay man. You also wouldn't be a catch for a gay woman. So you're right. It would be any gay man.
Although
you'd be a catch for any gay man.
I bet, especially the way I look now, there may be some gay women who find me attractive.
Why do you say that? How do you look now?
A little K.D. Lang-ish.
You do.
Yeah.
You have K.D. Lang vibes.
Yeah. Back to Andy's letter. Very flattering letter. Personally, I think we'd get along well, but I'd probably have to have you keep your frogs to yourself. I can just picture Andy like talking about me with our other friends, our gay couple friends, and like, oh.
He's always clucking frogs.
Yeah, Justin and his frogs. Yeah. So back to Andy. They freak me out and I'll freak you out. Freak me out and I won't have them near me. It's probably a phobia. Wow. I understand why people
I don't know if things will work out between you and Andy.
No. Not that I'm so into frogs, I'm catching them all the time. God, you sound like Jerry. I'm glad to hear you're both well after your brush with COVID. Thank you, Andy. And please continue to provide your wonderful program. Kind regards, Andy. What a nice letter.
What a gentleman.
God, I would get along with him. He sounds – and he flatters me. He first and foremost.
I hope he likes Vietnamese food.
Yeah, I bet he's a good laugher. Anyway, that is –
thanks, Andy. If you guys want to write in –
boyfriend twins, huh?
If you guys want – that, and thanks for the info.
Yeah.
That's good to know. If you guys want to write in, our email address is Justin.
LifeIsShort@Wondery.com. And just to reiterate, we've been having so much fun reading Would You Rathers, your Would You Rathers on our quarantine episodes. Those are always welcome. And obviously flattering things like Andy wrote are very welcome. And I like that fact too. It's nice to learn things. So thank you, Andy, and thank you – so much.
Maggie. Quigley.
Yeah. Just the best. I mean, I know I've said that like five times.
You say that about every guest.
I do.
But you actually have a very special relationship with her. So I think it applies to her.
Yeah. Okay.
And you're being phony about everyone else.
Yeah. So the one time I'm being honest, I wonder if you could hear it in my voice. I love her and her family. Shout out to all the Quigleys. I hope they're listening.
They
should be listening.
And thanks to you guys for listening.
Angela.
We will see you soon.
Yes. See you soon.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long, and it's why I go down on Long. And it's produced by you,
Christian Long.
And her,
Megan Monaco. Senior producer is Michelle.
Mish.
Lanz.
Audio engineer is Sergio.
Enriquez.
Executive producers are Marshall Louis and Hernan Lopez for
Wondery.
Have a great week. What's the name of the movie?
The Crazy or Mad Crazy, Crazy Mad Asians.
Crazy Mad Asians. So where do you get rich from? Oh, you know, I think it's crazy.
Crazy rich. No, the Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh, they're Crazy Rich Asians.
Crazy.
Why did Winnie...
Ask Chris, you'll know.
I'll ask. He's right here. Oh, he said Crazy Rich Asians.
That's what I saw.
Yeah. Why did Winnie want to see that so badly?
Because she said everybody's seeing it and it's supposed to be so wonderful. So I said, well, okay, I won't wait for the Netflix to show it to me.
Ah, what did you think of it? Do you wish you had waited?
Well, honey, I don't hear everything, even though I have my hearing aid on. And I couldn't see, even though there are only four people in the theater. But
oh, I thought you
were going to see their faces. You know, my eyes aren't that good. And so, she would fill me in. But anyhow, I thought it was pretty good.
Would she fill you in during the movie?
But they showed about half a dozen previews.
Uh-huh.
After all the advertisements, my, what a lot of crap they have in the movies today.
Yeah.
So, in every one of those previews showed ugly stuff. So who the hell wants to go to the movies today?
What ugly stuff? Oh, you mean like...
nice movies anymore.
Yeah, well... Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments. But business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.